Hello and welcome to A History of the United States, Episode 19, The Pilgrim Fathers. This show is currently undergoing a listener survey. If you could please go to the website, thehistoryofpodcast.com, and click on the page for this particular episode, you will find a link to the survey. It would be a great help if you could please complete that. Special thanks to our newest pioneer, listener Gabrielle. Thank you, I couldn't do the show without you. Last time out, we followed the Reformation as it swept across Europe into Lancashire, and how a small group of separatist Puritans were forced to flee abroad to the Netherlands, where they settled in Leiden, about 25 miles south of Amsterdam. They would spend the next decade there. It would not be particularly happy, though. The Dutch were Calvinists like them, but it must be remembered that so was the king back in England, who had forced them to flee. While I stressed last time out that most Puritans were not as cold as they are portrayed in pop culture, these separatists were the extreme. They found the Dutch too happy. They didn't keep the same gloomy Sunday of self-reflection as they did. They were also worried about spending too much time there, in case the children became too Batavianised. Plus, Leiden was an urban centre, and the separatists had come from small villages in eastern England. There was also the threat of war. There was an uneasy truce in the Netherlands between the Dutch and the Spanish, and there was no idea when the conflict would flare up again. It could be any year. When telling this chapter of the American story, we are very lucky to have William Bradford's Of Plymouth Plantation, a history of the early years of the colony written by one of its governors. Bradford stresses the rationality of their unhappiness. It was, and I quote, "not out of any newfangledness or other such like giddy humour by which men are oftentimes transported to their great hurt and danger," end quote. In short, the separatists missed England and wanted to go home, but they couldn't. You know, the whole exile thing. So there was really only one logical place for them. America. This makes complete sense. It was these years that saw the Dutch become seriously interested in the Americas and in creating New Netherland. The Hudson River was explored, New Amsterdam was founded, later to be renamed New York City. And in what would become upstate New York, a trading post was established called Fort Nassau, later renamed Fort Orange, which would become the state capital, Albany. You have only to look at the flags of New York City and Albany to see the Dutch influence. They both contain the orange, white, and blue stripes of the prince's flag, the flag of the Prince of Orange. The Dutch were interested in sailing the separatists across, but one of the conditions would be that they would have to join a Dutch colony. The separatists were too homesick for that, and so they tried to see if they could go to Virginia. This would also give them the opportunity to spread their faith. As it was put by Bradford, quote, "the place they had thought was on some of those vast and unpeopled countries of America, which are fruitful and fit for habitation, being devoid of all civil inhabitants, where there are only savage and brutish men, which range up and down, little otherwise than the wild beasts of the same," end quote. If they couldn't go home, this was the next best thing. I will note, as a curiosity, that one of the other places considered was Guyana in South America, next to Venezuela. Imagine how differently things could have turned out had New England been set up in South America. In 1617, two of the more senior figures, Deacon John Carver and Robert Cushman, both travelled to London to see what they could do. Sandys was excited to get them to go to Virginia. We covered this back in episode 11, Introduction to Social History. While King James would not formally agree to consent with their religious freedom, He agreed informally for the process to advance. There was some delay, but finally a patent was issued, allowing them to set up a colony. They also attracted the attention of the Plymouth Company, who you'll remember from way back in episode 2. It was the Plymouth Company that set up the ill-fated North Virginia colony at St. George's Fort, and this would give them legal jurisdiction over New England. The only problem was financing the expedition. All these delays led a backer to become interested, Thomas Weston, a London merchant. Weston agreed to pay for the expedition on the condition that they work for him for a period of 7 years, with a division of profits at the end. Each colonist would have one share of stock in the company, and would be given £10 worth of supplies per stock they had. While the separatists wanted individual ownership, the merchants in London insisted on the joint stock model, which raised around £7,000, and an agreement was finally reached on July 1st, 1620. Bradford preserves the terms of the agreement. Quote, 1. The adventurers and planters do agree that every person that goeth, being aged 16 years and upward, be rated at £10, and £10 to be accounted a single share. 2. That he that goeth in person and furnisheth himself out with £10 either in money or other provisions, be accounted as having £20 in stock, and in the division shall receive a double share. 3. The persons transported and the adventurers shall continue their joint stock and partnership together the space of 7 years, except some unexpected impediment do cause the whole company to agree otherwise, during which time all profits and benefits that are got by trade, traffic, trucking, working, fishing, or any other means of any person or persons remain still in the common stock until the division. 4. That their coming there, they shall choose out such a number of fit persons as may furnish their ships and boats for fishing upon the sea, employing the rest in their several faculties upon the land, as building houses, tilling, and planting the soil, and making such commodities as shall be most useful for the colony. 5. That at the end of the 7 years, the capital and profits, viz. The houses, lands, goods, and chattels, be equally divided betwixt the adventurers and planters, which done, every man shall be free from other of them of any debt or detriment concerning this adventure. 6. Whosoever cometh to the colony hereafter, or putteth any into the stock, shall at the end of the 7 years be allowed proportionally to the time of his so doing. 7. He that shall carry his wife and children, or servants, shall be allowed for every person now aged 16 years and upward a single share in the division, or, if he provided them necessaries, a double share, or if they be between 10 years old and 16, then two of them to be reckoned for a person, both in transportation and division. 8. That such children as now go and are aged under the age of 10 years have no other share in the division but 50 acres of unmanured land. 9. That such persons as die before the 7 years be expired, their executors to have their part or share at the division, proportionably to the time of their life in the colony. 10. That all such persons as are of this colony are allowed to have their meat, drink, apparel, and all provisions out of the common stock and goods of the said colony. End quote. It had taken them 13 years, but they were finally going to get a new home. Why did it take them so long? The separatists, frankly, made life very hard for themselves. This was the extreme fringe of Puritanism, it must be remembered. Most Puritans had just gotten on with life in England. They would go on to play a very prominent role in the English Civil War, but these couldn't take it. That is the first indication of making life hard for themselves. Then there was the whole not getting too friendly with the Dutch, which meant they couldn't settle there, and even now, while they were appealing to help in London, Elder William Brewster, one of the two main figures within the colony, along with Pastor John Robinson, decided to, rather than letting sleeping dogs lie, just go ahead and not even poke it with a stick, more scream down its ear. He openly condemned King James's religious policy in Scotland, which of course royally pissed off King James. Brewster had to go into hiding for a while, which is an issue when you're trying to convince the people you're hiding from to let you settle in their lands. That's my take on the matter anyway. One of the classics when studying The Settlement of New England, The Pilgrim Republic by John Goodwin, first published in 1888, takes a very different approach. Quote, "In 1619, the English government complained that Brewster's books were vented underhand in their country, and asked that he be delivered for trial in England. Strange it is that the Dutch should have descended to such a violation of the rights of asylum. Brewster, for 11 years, had been an industrious and peaceful prince of Holland, and was still pursuing a calling useful and entirely lawful there. But the Dutch, anxious to strengthen their English alliance against Spain, promptly sacrificed principle and self-respect." End quote. Goodwin, to me, seems a bit too in favour of Brewster here, but feel free to agree with him if you want to. I'm only here to tell you what happened, not what to think. The mood was also dampened when another group of 130 separatists who were sailing to America from Amsterdam died in a storm. Not the best of omens. They managed to secure a ship, the Speedwell, which was only small at 60 tons. This would take them from Leyden to Southampton, where they had managed to secure a larger 180-ton ship to carry most of the passengers, the Mayflower. Most of the settlers were unable to organise their affairs in time to make the journey, and they only had two ships. There was no way they would all be able to travel. A small group was to make the initial journey, led by Brewster, while the large majority would stay behind to be led by a bitterly disappointed Robinson. Families were divided, in many cases never to see each other again, despite the pledge that they would make the journey as soon as they could. There was almost a last-minute hiccup when Weston decided that he wanted to wait until a New England company could be chartered, but there were too many cogs in motion for the expedition to be halted. So, on July 22, 1620, the separatists left the Netherlands and set sail for Southampton. They were joined by some more religious dissidents, but mostly they met the crew and others gathered by the merchants, indentured servants and craftsmen the merchants thought would be useful for the colony. I'm sure you'll be interested to hear that our old friend, John Smith, offered to join the pilgrims on their expedition, but they boldly refused. Considering that for all of Smith's brilliance, he left the New World almost dead after his colleagues tried to assassinate him, I don't entirely blame them for not wanting him along. This is the important thing to remember when thinking about the founders of New England. Of the 102 passengers plus crew to travel, only 35 were confirmably separatists. I find that really startling. When you think about the voyage of the Mayflower, it is the Puritans that come to mind. In reality, only a third of those making the trip were of such persuasion. They set off for America in August, but they very quickly met with problems. Because of the recent shipwreck the other month, which had killed the other bunch of travelling separatists, they were really jumpy. The Speedwell wasn't the strongest of ships, and it began to spring leaks, which freaked out the separatists. Twice they forced the convoy back to England. Eventually they decided to just abandon the Shipwell altogether, and they crammed onto the Mayflower. And on September 6th, they finally began their journey to the New World. This is the point where we can finally call them the Pilgrims. And it is also the point where we will end things for this week. Almost. There are some minor disagreements about exactly how many people were on the Mayflower, and when it set sail. I've seen reports that it was September 6th, and also that it was September 16th. I can't find any real consensus on the matter, but the version which says that the ship sailed on the 6th seems slightly more common, so I've gone with that. This is just to make you aware, in case you do some reading on the subject, and it says that the Mayflower set off on the 16th rather than the 6th. Not to think I'm a bad historian and don't properly fact-check. It just goes to show you, historians don't really know anything. If you've enjoyed today's episode, you can visit us online, you can visit the website, thehistoryofpodcast.com, and sign up for membership or complete the listener survey. You can like the Facebook page, facebook.com/thehistoryofpodcast. You can follow me on Twitter, @historyjamie, and you can send me an email, thehistoryofpodcast@gmail.com. I'll see you in a few days. Thanks for listening.